Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:08, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 25th. And today we saw follow-through on what was really an emphatic upward move yesterday, with the majority of markets in positive territory. And Hong Kong, which has been really in need of an upward dynamic, was up by 2.7%, and the Australian index was up 1.4%. And interesting, too, that there was that news story yesterday saying that hedge funds are moving in to short the Australian banks, which really, what occurred to me reading that was that it was like bolting the barn door after the horse has bolted, because the Australian banks have already had a sharp pullback, and there's evidence of support building among many of them, and not least because the RBA is in easing territory and might already be at record low interest rates for Australia, but those are attractive interest rates for just about everywhere else. So they have plenty of room in which to cut interest rates. Well, that also helps to highlight the fact that it really is the Fed is the only central bank that is talking about raising interest rates. Everywhere else is either holding steady or cutting, and that's particularly the case among the major economies. So then we look at Europe, and the majority of indices were up over 1%, and the euro was a little bit steadier in here today, but certainly no upward dynamics for the euro. And considering that the ECB is really hell-bent on increasing monetary accommodation, and they're opening up the spigot, and they're willing to accept just about anything as collateral that the various banks are willing to post with them. So then the ECB, though, is I guess what you could say is giving with one hand and taking with the other. They've opened wide what they're willing to accept as collateral, but they've closed off what they're willing to pay for it because they've got these negative interest rates. So that rather ties the hand of the banking sector in Europe, because they find it hard to increase the amount of credit they're making available to consumers and to businesses when they have to pay for that high quality collateral from the ECB. And therein lies the rub. So the European economy is beginning to recover. It would probably be recovering a lot faster if the banking sector could extend credit, and the ECB is doing whatever it can to encourage lending. Now, the banking sector is back pretty close to the 2011 and 12 lows and the 2009 lows. So if we were to consider that this is a developing base formation, which so far is 7 years in the making, then very short term there's a progression of higher reaction lows, and those would need to be taken out to question potential for some additional upside here. And the fact that the Europeans and the IMF reached an agreement about how to tackle the significant challenges that continue to face Greece. And that was in the twilight hours yesterday. So then what they've decided was that Greece will be able to access the next tranche of its bailout funds, and that once this current bailout expires, which conveniently happens to be after the next German election, so that it won't become an election issue, then there is the potential that they will be able to get some sort of debt relief. And of course, debt relief has been something that has been vitally necessary but politically unpalatable for much of the last 6 years. So the very prospect that they have opened the door to that, and that there is some grown-up conversation finally, that you cannot get blood out of a stone, is very good news indeed. So that removes a source of uncertainty. Of course, there are plenty of uncertainties, but at least that removes one source of uncertainty, and that is also helping to see European stock markets outperforming. And of course, they have had a much bigger pullback. There's a number of indices, not least the FTSE 100, down 30% in the last year. So then they have considerably more room to rally, because they fell more than Wall Street. And Wall Street was none too shabby in here either. It was up 0.75% on the S&P 500, and that's bringing us back up towards 2100. And that 2100 area was an area of resistance back in April. So Now the question is it going to represent resistance once more? But really, a downward dynamic from here would be required to signal that there is selling pressure up here. And the I guess the jury is still out on what exact impact on investor sentiment a rate hike would constitute. So on the one hand, it would be that it's going to put pressure on leveraged traders, and that would have a knock-on effect on the size of positions, and particularly at those autonomous trading systems. On the other hand, people might say that, well, the Fed wouldn't raise rates unless they were absolutely certain that the economy could endure it, and therefore maybe the economy is a bit stronger than we had priced in. So there are two really quite credible and competing arguments at the upper side of this range. And just like the upper side of any range, then we've had a consolidation in the region of the upper side of what has been a more than year-long range. And a successful breakout would represent a prices pushing through a vacuum of supply above the market. And then we have to remember that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. And then I think the majority of people do not expect there to be a breakout. But in the event that there is a breakout, that it's probably likely to take people by surprise in the strength with which any market can break out of what is a well-defined range. And this is most definitely a well-defined range. There's much at stake here, because a failure at these levels, particularly if we were to get a breakout and then it were to pull back violently into the range, would suggest that we are going to go right back down and test the lower side of that range. So this really is a very important time to be monitoring exactly what is happening in stocks. And in the commodity markets, a lot has continue to center on oil, and oil prices today were firm, and the Brent crude price is closing out the day at $49.88, so really closing in on the $50 psychological level. Got up to test it in early trading today, pulled back, and then recouped its almost entire advance to close right at the top of that short-term range. And this rally that we've had in oil prices is about the most orderly rally that we can see in just about any market at present. And reactions have been limited to between $5 and $6, and a reaction of greater than six and more like $7 would really be required to even begin to question potential for this to continue to improve. And the definition of a consistent trend from the chart seminar is a consistent trend is a trend in motion. In other words, that a consolidation is followed by a breakout, which is followed by a consolidation, which is followed by a breakout. And that's exactly what we can see in Brent crude in particular. And as long as it continues doing that, then there is no reason to suspect that it won't continue to do that, even regardless of the fact that prices have almost doubled off their lows and are approaching economic levels for unconventional oil and gas. But nonetheless, prices have given absolutely no indication that they have yet to encounter resistance. And elsewhere in the commodity sector, soybeans has been remarkably steady in this following really what was an emphatic breakout, has had a very steady, very orderly consolidation, and was up by about 30 cents in here today, which was really very firm. And on the other side of the coin is Arabica coffee, which has pulled back violently over the last six and seven sessions and unwound almost its entire short-term advance. But now it's back at a previous area of support. And if it was short-term oversold 10 days ago, well, it's short-term, if it was short-term overbought 10 days ago, it's short-term oversold right now. So potentially looking interesting again. Whereas white sugar was stronger by 11 in here today, and that continues to look like a recovery scenario. So then you look around at the broad commodity sector, and yes, there is additional volatility, but what we're seeing is that there are more of them are rallying than are declining, and it is certainly a time to be looking at individual commodities based on their individual merits. And the dollar wasn't especially firm in here today, but neither was it weak. But silver prices were up by about 7 cents, and they had pulled back really quite sharply, whereas gold is pretty much unchanged on the day. I think it was down just $2. So, you know, this remains a consolidation and a rangy environment overall for gold prices. High beta plays like silver and platinum have experienced deeper pullbacks, and gold shares continue to correct following what was just a spectacular rally from the beginning of the year. So then I think it is perhaps time to begin to start nibbling, but I haven't quite done it yet. I'm sort of waiting for a little bit of additional evidence before I take the plunge, but neither do I think that this is the end, but rather this is really just a consolidation in what continues to look like a really quite a favorable medium-term condition. And the bond markets today, having been weak yesterday, were a little bit firmer. But you know, the bonds are at a stage now where, rather than looking at the long end of the curve, where they're continuing to get quite a bit of demand, particularly for those that see negative rates or negative yields on a whole slew of European and Japanese bonds, but rather to look at the short end of the curve, where you have 12-month yields that have been trending higher now for more than a year and continue to find support at progressively higher levels and in the region of the trend mean. So yes, it's been quite volatile, particularly over the last 3 months, but with that progression of higher reaction lows, then we're getting a flattening yield curve, where the short end of the curve is rising faster than the long end of the curve. And it is still about 100 basis points. It's not quite 100 basis points from going inverted, but it is something that we need to keep watch on, because an inverted yield curve is about the most reliable indication of a future recession that we have, and not least because it offers such a long lead time, which is between 12 and 18 months. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.